Welcome to the Popcorn Junkies.
Welcome to the Popcorn Junkies.
We are reviewing. What are we reviewing, Mum?
We're reviewing Asteroid City.
Asteroid City, which is, of course, the new film by who, Mum?
Is it Wes?
Wes?
I want to say Craven.
No.
No,
Wes Anderson.
Who's Wes Craven?
If you're listening on podcasts, I do apologise. I know you come to us for a sort of really incisive analysis.
Wes Anderson.
I can't remember who directed this, but anyway. Yeah, so this is Asteroid City, Wes Anderson's new film. Now, you can't talk about a Wes Anderson film before you establish quite quickly the terms of engagement.
Yeah.
I.e., what are you? Are you a Wes Anderson fan? Mum, discuss. Are you a Wes Anderson fan? If so, of which films and why?
Well, I was never a fan of the very first one, which I think was The Royal Tenenbaums.
Right.
I hated it.
Okay.
But everything since then I've liked.
Have you? Everything?
In a sort of sliding scale, yeah.
I think The Fantastic Mr. Fox is one of Maddie's favourite
films. I like that a lot. But my practically favourite,
yes,
is the one with the dogs wandering around.
Oh, Isle of Dogs.
Isle of Dogs.
So you,
exactly.
You like his puppetry ones, or his stop-motion?
Stop-motion ones. But I also liked, you know, some of the ones like the railway one and the one set in an Indian hotel.
The Grand Budapest Hotel, the French Dispatch, Moonrise Kingdom.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be hard pushed to say I'm an enormous fan. I mean, I admire and I recognise his skill.
I mean,
obviously, we all now know a Wes Anderson film Inside Out and Back to Front. And I think, in a weird way, you know, there's this online, I don't know if you've seen, there's this TikTok or Instagram social media trend for presenting your life as if it's a Wes Anderson film. So everyone's sort of taken his aesthetic and they're turning it into something that, you know, is kind of social media-esque. And I think within that, there's something that Wes Anderson needs to be mindful of, because you know a Wes Anderson film, but, well, we'll get to the bottom of this in a minute. My worry is that sometimes they all run the risk of being a bit samey.
Yes.
If I'm honest. Incredibly ornate. Like, I think when we reviewed The French Dispatch, often like those picture books that you would open and the pictures would step out. They're pop-up books.
Yeah,
I find his films like pop-up books. They're almost like Escher paintings and
or
drawings.
Or friezes. He loves that sideward shot, doesn't he?
He loves a sideward pan, a track. He loves a whip pan, but holding it on a very strict axis so it doesn't tilt up or down when it does that.
Okay.
And obviously he's hugely, his use of set design, production design, composition, obviously all that kind of stuff, incredibly important. So Asteroid City, his latest film, is set within an indistinct part of the desert, American desert. It's 1955. It's a sort of scientific innovation competition, isn't it, for youngsters?
Yes,
young, innovative, astonishingly, startlingly clever, young, bright scientists. And in a weird way, that's the artifice. That's the construct. And it's about all these characters descending upon this. But in classic Wes Anderson fashion, that's not all it is. It's also a film about a playwright writing this play that's happening in this asteroid city.
Yes.
And so you have a sort of black and white behind the scenes and
a narrator.
You know, yeah, a narrator played by Ed Norton, writer, if you like, and Bryan Cranston is the narrator. And so you have this sort of curious device of this whole thing is about a play in a play. So it's very much about making stories. It's about the artifice of creating this artificial world. It's all, you know, all the actors, it's made known to us. The actors right at the beginning, there's almost a cast list given to us, isn't there? They did that sort of focus pull between all the two-shot heads. You know, they'd have two shots of two actors and they'd say who they are and who they're playing. And then we had this process of establishing Ed Norton as the playwright.
Yeah.
And then you had the device of, you know, backstage essentially is black and white and front of stage is on this actually what looks like a desert landscape where atomic bombs are going off sort of incidentally in the background. What did that do for you, that sort of setup? How are you sort of settling into this?
Well, I was starting to get cross,
quite quickly?
Yeah, because I thought there was something sort of wrong for me about how brainy the children were and how he kept going round and round in circles with stuff that most people wouldn't know what the hell he was talking about. And I don't know what the point of that was. I didn't care about any of these kids. I had a real problem with this film, actually.
Okay,
and it was very typical Wes Anderson, so I don't know why I had such a problem.
Why do you think you had a problem? Let's unpack this. Let's be like a shrink. Let's be a movie shrink. That's a good thing.
He'd go along with his camera going from one group to another and they would all be the same. There was no variety.
What do you mean? What would all be the same?
It'd be a different person saying the same thing as they'd said the last time we went down the road.
Right.
And there was masses of that.
I don't think they were saying the same thing. I think it might have felt like they were saying the same thing, but they weren't necessarily saying the same thing. I mean, if there's Jason Schwartzman is, in a sense, the central character. He's the person who we're following. He's a father. He's lost his partner, played by Margot Robbie. He has children. And if there was an emotional theme or kind of punch point in this, it was grief. I mean, it's the most, I mean, if I'm honest, I found myself sitting there thinking, oh, this is unusual. It's not often that I find with Wes Anderson films that I'm quite quickly feeling the sense of, oh, is he perhaps here trying to work something out thematically? I always think, because so much of what he does with his films is it's an elaborate game, isn't it? It's like a complex riddle, or not even a riddle to be solved, but just a sort of, there's a formula that he goes through. And part of the joy of a Wes Anderson film is saying, I'm in for the ride. And I'm going to join you, and it's not necessarily going to make much sense, and I'm not going to necessarily be very emotionally engaged, but it's going to be clever, it's going to be quirky, it's going to be odd.
Well, that's exactly what it was.
But that annoyed you. Do you think you've hit peak Wes Anderson?
Because I think I have. It was no more than that. That was the problem.
Right.
And I think I said before we went in, or as it started, that there is now becoming a problem for me with all the famous stars, one after another, in that it becomes more to me of a film waiting to see who the next famous actor is, rather than listening to what they say or watching what they're doing, which, except for Jason Schwartzman, who's always his main character, and I can't stand him.
Oh, you don't like him?
Don't like him.
I really liked Jason Schwartzman in this.
Did you?
I did. I mean, look, if you look at, I don't know how many we've reviewed since we've had the channel, but I think we did Isle of Dogs and French Dispatch. I've said it many times, one of my major problems with nearly all of Wes Anderson's stuff is that I don't find myself engaged on an emotional level.
No. So
I'm not drawn in, I'm not really caring about the truth. I don't feel there is any truth actually to be had. It's all about trickery and wordplay and not even kind of film play, because he does the same thing in different sort of setups. But
exactly.
But it is about storytelling. I do wonder whether he's sort of, in a sense, should have written a book, because sometimes I think, is he a sort of modern-day American indie version of Peter Greenaway? Do you remember? Peter Greenaway would make entire films based around the idea that he was putting a number in every shot somewhere, which he knew was there, but no one else knew was there. So I do worry that they do become incredibly self-indulgent, and I do sometimes think you're right, that a lot of the actors that sign up to these films sign up to them because it's a Wes Anderson film.
Yeah, but there were always different Peter Greenaway films. I mean, that was in one film, and there's always a different sort of...
Yeah, but I mean, he was criticised for being all form over content.
It was all
style and no content, and I worry, and I've struggled in the past with that being the case with Wes Anderson.
Yeah.
So Jason Schwartzman wasn't doing it for you. So this also stars Scarlett Johansson. She plays the mother of one of the other children at this sort of convention, if you like, this sort of science convention for young geniuses. One of them's called Brainiac and all that kind of stuff. There is a meteorite that they're all there to celebrate, and a UFO appears and an alien lands. And essentially, that's everyone saying goodbye, and essentially steals or takes the meteorite. And because there's been a UFO kind of presence or an alien moment, Jeffrey Wright's general enacts a quarantine. And this film is riffing on all of that stuff around, you know, what is it, Area 58, Section 59 in the Nevada desert.
Yeah.
It's dealing with the atomic bomb. In the background all the time, there are little mushroom clouds going off. This is very much about the American emergence of interest in space. The idea of UFOs became a thing in the mid-1950s. And this film is sort of riffing on the style and era of that. And I think, personally, I found this a much more stimulating watch because of all that than, say, The French Dispatch. I find Grand Budapest Hotel, I love literary, but I found them almost so literary, whereas I felt this, for Wes Anderson, was riffing far more on a filmic history more than his others, which I feel are riffing on literary ideas.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with that, but I like them more than this.
That's interesting.
I mean, one of the things that annoyed me about this was that it is a filmic sort of filmic references, and the whole our story thing and the whole person coming down from space and everything. I thought it was dealt with too funnily, as if it was funny.
Right.
It's not funny. And I suppose because at the moment there are either so many films or so many conversations or so much written about potential things going off in various parts of the world and nuclear explosions and whatever. I was just thinking as I watched it, there's no idea. It's all funny, funny, funny humour. And if you're not getting the humour, then you're not getting...
Saying, it's sort of like a film. It felt like a film made in a vacuum, unaware of anything going on in the world at all.
And it made me think at one point...
It's a Wes Anderson film, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I suppose, but I didn't... Because it was an asteroid, and then the guy comes down, and I didn't... The alien. It just occurred to me at one point. I suddenly thought of Nope. And I thought, my God, in that film, although it wasn't a direct alien film, I felt such tension, such dramatic sort of, oh, my God, this is the end of the world. He made me think that. And this is so the opposite end of that, that it just annoyed me. And I thought, no, I can't take any of this seriously. Mm. He's laughing, and okay, I suppose all you can do is laugh, but I didn't find it funny.
I know what you mean. I mean, I feel like he hit upon grief as a possible topic, and I don't feel he in any way interrogated it. So
you
didn't follow through with the grief. I was bringing that to it. You know, Tom Hanks plays the sort of, in a sense, estranged grandfather, the father of the dead mother of the children of Jason Schwartzman's kids. You know, I thought that, you know, there were sort of some quite intimate scenes between Jason Schwartzman and Scarlett Johansson's character, who, when they're in quarantine, essentially are neighbours in these sort of, if you like, chalets.
Yeah. Like...
And obviously a romance of sorts is kind of developing there. I thought Scarlett Johansson actually brought a lot to her part.
Yeah.
I thought she gave it more depth. I felt sadness for her. I felt sort of thwarted ambition. You know, there was a sort of mock-up sort of suicide scene and what have you.
She was acting on her own, though.
She was acting on her own. And I did like Jason Schwartzman's sort of erstwhile kind of, you know, hangdog sort of expression. But you're right. We've seen it a million times.
Yeah.
We've seen it a million times.
And for some reason, I particularly don't like Jason
Schwartzman's
jizz, or whatever you call it, in this film in particular.
Right.
I mean, I know he was just playing the same, but I just found it charmless, graceless, and not funny.
Wow. Well, the actor's performances we can agree on is Jeffrey Wright is sensational.
Was absolutely stunning.
His delivery of a particular monologue about his life story was just second to none, and I could watch again and again and again, and has to become a monologue that acting students use when they audition for college. I thought he was excellent. I thought Steve Carell was sort of on the fringes. Liv Schreiber, you quite like?
Yeah,
don't you?
I thought he was good.
I thought he was good, yeah. I love the sense of location. I love the sense of place. I love the way in which he managed to create a sense of desert, and yet clearly was using lots of props to construct a sense of desert. So I liked all of that. But
I was really waiting to like it. I wanted to like it. I wanted to like it far more than I ended up liking it.
Right.
I mean, I really tried.
Yeah.
But
I wasn't convinced by Tilda Swinton, who played this sort of frustrated professor scientist type.
I quite like, what's his name?
Oh, Adrian Brody.
Adrian Brody.
Right, so the part of this film that, again, I thought that Wes Anderson inadvertently hit upon a really rich seam and then didn't exploit it was the whole, the artifice of creating a play and what it means to create a fiction. And this is, if you know, without, you know, I feel he's asking, it's one of those weird things, a bit like, you know, I feel like he's asking us to bring all this analysis to it because it's so sort of impenetrable in so many different ways. So you are sitting there going, okay, well, what are you trying? You must be trying to say something. You wouldn't be doing all this otherwise. And so what was he trying
to say?
What was he saying about creating fiction and creating a world? Was he making us think about the fact that actually actors, they come in, they occupy this space, but they don't necessarily feel anything before they go into occupying the space? Because there's that moment where he says to Adrian Brody something like, am I doing it right? And he says that wonderful line, don't worry about that.
Yeah.
Just worry about telling the story.
Yeah, and which is a great line, actually.
It's a great line, but maybe it goes to the heart of what the problem is with Wes Anderson. You can't, for me, a story has to have reservoirs of emotional depth.
Yeah.
And it can't just be a sort of ever-evolving, kaleidoscopic, visually stimulating, oh wow, which this is all the way through it. Because after a while, you sort of go, well, what is this in service of?
Yeah.
What am I being asked to think?
Exactly.
What were you asked to think?
I mean, exactly.
What were you asked to think?
Well, exactly. I wasn't asked to think anything except another collection of famous faces. Also, I thought the whole structure, and this is very unusual for me, because with books, I love the sort of conceit of having a book about a book about a book. I mean, I really really get into that. But in this case, it just annoyed me intensely. There was so much information given to us in each of those passages, which I couldn't be bothered to read when it was on the screen, and it didn't mean anything to me when I did. Mm. And he was just sort of feeding all this information to us, which the only bit of the film that resonated for me was the sort of dramatic bit, I suppose, of the alien coming down.
I mean, I think the danger and the problem I have with all of his films is that so much detail is being given to you, and he's asking you to engage with all the finer detail. He's observed, I mean, there's not a single centimetre of a frame that he hasn't thought about.
No.
There's not a colour of set design that he hasn't considered, or a font that he won't have agonised over. And you end up thinking, well, for all of that focus, you're surely asking us to find something very meaningful in this. And in a weird way, he doesn't allow you even the time to drill into what some of this could mean. Because actually, unfortunately, the worry for me is that it doesn't actually mean anything. It's a sort of curiosity. It's a wander through a sort of corner of his mind that's a curiosity. You know, I liked this more than, say, the last one, because I enjoyed being in the desert. I enjoyed the sense of it being sort of Oppenheimer time. We've got the Oppenheimer film coming out, so that you've got that added sort of nuclear aspect to it. I felt a certain sense of era was good, but it didn't even take me anywhere there. I didn't feel like it told me to feel anything different.
No.
I mean, I was getting that sense of, you know, Bikini Island. You know, I was waiting for a bomb to go off and for them all to be obliterated.
Well, yes,
it didn't make me rethink anything. It didn't make me reconsider an era. It didn't, and even where it got rich and interesting around what does it mean to be an actor, putting on a show, front of house, Ed Norton, when Ed Norton kissed him, when he hugged him behind stage. I mean, when they were all pretending to be asleep, it was a bit wanky.
It was so wanky. I mean, it's no good, OK, the desert location, but even then, by about the second reel, I was getting fed up of that because it's all the same.
Mm.
And his shots are all the same. They're all going along the line, coming back along the line. Mm. And they really are, aren't they? I mean, I'm not exaggerating.
And they're lovely. They're lovely to watch.
Formally,
they're lovely to watch.
But how often have we seen that now? This must be about the sixth film where that's happened.
That's why I think what he needs to do for his next film is take it off the tripod, go handheld and do full Steadicam. I think he has to somehow wrong-foot us.
And he has to write something that's different. I mean, that was a great line, the one we just quoted, that you said, you know, the story. That is a great line, but it was the only one.
Yeah.
And all the rest of it is conversation between actors who are desperate to give us a good show because they want to. Mm. Like Scarlett Johansson was just one of many. He gave her more to do.
I thought she was great. I thought Jeffrey Wright was great.
Yeah, he was
great. I liked the kids. I thought they were great. I thought the whole alien landing, I thought the alien was incredibly poignant and incredibly sweet.
I did, interestingly enough.
Yeah, I found it quite emotional. I was imbuing the scene where Jason Schwartzman was talking about loss and grief and all that kind of stuff with his kids. Am I an orphan daddy? And he was like, no, scoffing. I was imbuing that with more meaning than I think the director was putting in the scene. And the moment at the end about what it means to be an actor, I felt like I was also imbuing that with more meaning than necessarily he was offering us. I think, you know, he hit upon some really potentially rich themes, but he's not a thematic filmmaker. He's a formalist. He's a stylist. He's a, you know, he's someone who's interested in the architecture of imagery, and he's not necessarily interested in the psychology of performances. And dare I say that in a much more ornate fashion, he falls foul of that thing that Hitchcock did, which is actors are in a sense just warm props within his shots. And they quite literally are. And that doesn't mean they don't sit well in his shots. They really do. But by sitting so well compositionally within the shots and sequences, he almost renders them mute, and they can't carry any depth because they're formal.
No, exactly. And so whatever you're sort of feeling at the look of it or working out who belongs to who and whatever, because there's no good dialogue in it at all, because there's no sort of there's nothing that's important.
Well, I think even more than that, I think he actively sort of actively shoves you in the face, because even when the kids were doing that game where they were trying to remember names, he could have offered us a few names we knew.
That was horrible. I thought that was real thumbing your nose at people who don't know certain philosophers or whatever they even
were. And I begin to sometimes wonder whether that's a part of what he does in all his films, which is kind of either you get this and if you don't, it's more poo-poo to you.
Well, funnily enough, I thought that a lot about the Royal Tenenbaums. That was one of the reasons I didn't like it. And then I chose to put all that over here because I liked his visual style.
So are you saying that you only like his sort of animation?
Well, no,
because the best bit in this that you've talked about is the alien, and that was animation too.
That's true. No, I just didn't think this worked as a movie.
Have I said that?
Well, no, but it was about.
Any of his films have really worked for me in the way that they work for some people. I have to have much more emotional anchoring to stuff, and it's not to say that some of his early films didn't have that. They did. But for me, not enough. And the last couple of... I mean, I found parts of The French Dispatch hysterical. You know, the sequence with Benicio del Toro in the wheelchair as the artist. I thought it was fantastic. I mean, I come at his films and I think, oh, I really like that turn by that actor.
Yeah.
And in this film, I'll come away from
Scarlett,
it going, oh, I like Scarlett and I like Jeffrey Wright. Jeffrey Wright made me laugh out loud.
Yeah, they could have given him more.
Well, and his scene where the president contacts, he's just brilliant. It was just every line that he delivered, he was sensational. So
but
for that
rather
alone,
than even giving two people who were doing brilliant performances more or writing more for them, he just filled the screen with more and more famous faces, which is like we're going like this, oh yes, that's Willem Dafoe, oh yes, that's so-and-so. I mean, really?
Yeah, it needs to do something smaller, it needs to be more written, and I think it needs to pull the camera off the tripod. Okay, I'm going to kick in with my score. It was a tricky one, this one, for me, because actually I found myself, I wasn't actually bored. That's the weird thing. And because and I think it's hard to be bored in a Wes Anderson film, but I was a bit bored in The French Dispatch.
I was a bit bored in this.
Yeah, well, I wasn't as bored in this because I could just keep, I love Americana. I love sort of diners. I love American signage.
Yeah,
I love menus. I love cars. Matt Dillon.
Yeah.
Matt Damon. Matt Dillon gives a brilliant, the opening scene I thought was hysterical.
Yeah, it was.
And it's almost like, what they call those, hokey? It's like a small poem or aphorism.
Oh, yeah.
The
haiku,
lunacy
haiku.
It was like a haiku about the lunacy of mechanics and car mechanics.
That was funny. I thought
that was hysterical.
Was really funny.
And that was that was proof that Wes Anderson can. That was funny.
And that was right at the beginning.
Right at the beginning. And then it didn't really match that sort of humour until Jeffrey Wright was in the film. So what carried me again, as I say, was the cinema. It was the technical, the colour. the widescreen. I was most interested in the black and white stuff. Let's really get into the nuts and bolts of what it means to create a fiction and be a writer and be actors, be backstage, front of stage. I thought it was actually a very moving moment, actually. And actually, one of the best moments I've seen Margot Robbie on screen in recent years.
Yeah.
I thought her moment with him across the sort of...
I don't disagree with that.
Across the balconies. And I won't ruin how it happens at White House, but I thought there was something really, really moving about that. Because what they were talking about, actually, was the development of their relationship in this fiction that never made the cut of the film that Jason Schwartzman's just come out of for a moment.
Yeah.
And yet, that backstory has made the cut of this film. And that, for me, in a weird way, was one of the cleverest moments.
Yeah.
And I got a little bit moved by that. I got a little bit moved by the Adrian Brody bit and a little bit by Jason Schwartzman. And actually, I found Scarlett Johansson really watchable. So all of that said, for me, it was a better experience than The French Dispatch. I can't remember what I scored The French Dispatch. But if I was to give this a score, I would probably give this... 68 out of 100.
Oh, okay. Let me just ask you a question. What did you think of the actual man coming down for the asteroid moment?
Did you feel anything? I was getting fantastic Mr. Fox vibes.
Oh, were you?
I found it quite poignant. Like, there was something quite poignant. I thought he looked quite sad and he looked kind of sorry for everyone.
I thought he was sweet, but I mean, I thought he was from a different film.
Right.
As I say, even the look of it, I started to get bored with.
Right.
It looks great. It looks like a desert. It looks great. He washes everything out. Mm. When I saw the trailer, I thought, oh, this is going to be brilliant. Mm. I really thought it was. It was too much of everything without any sort of character development. I didn't find the story within a story interesting. I found it boring.
I didn't say I found it. I said he had a good theme, which he didn't follow through. What I'm saying is that was the richest possibility.
Yeah.
But I'm not saying he succeeded.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, no, he really didn't succeed for me with that. I mean, the only bit that succeeded really with this film was, as you've said, and as I've already said, is the moments of standout stardom, like Jeffrey Wright, Scarlett Johansson, Adrian Brody. Yeah, I'm saying all the same as you. I didn't like Jason Schwartzman. I thought there was a real tone of, not just in that kids talking about different philosophers or people that we've never heard of, but there was a real tone of, I know a lot more than you, and I'm going to show you all the stuff that you don't know. And it made me not like the film much.
But I do think that's what Wes Anderson does.
What do you think, guys?
If you're a Wes Anderson fan, I do think he's involved in making you feel a little bit ill-equipped or perhaps not knowledgeable enough.
That he's superior to you.
In a way,
I found a bit offensive. I would give it, but because I do agree, it looks amazing. It does look amazing until you get bored, and I got bored pretty quickly. But I'd give it something like about 48.
Okay, yeah, I thought that would be what you'd give it. You know what I think he needs to do to get it out of his system? I think he needs to do a photographic exhibition. This would have done well as a series of stills. This should have just been a series of stills in the Barbican.
Somebody needs to tell him
Just, you know, I mean, like, it makes, because I'm looking at the Asteroid City flyer behind you, it makes great kind of, I mean, he makes great images, but great images doesn't necessarily make a great film. And I think the only thing that carried this beyond just for, you know, all form over content was the fact that I was kind of throwing in sort of depth, perhaps, where it wasn't even necessarily there, but I was sort of reading more into what must it have been like as a father, the grief, was his connection with Scarlett Johansson about loss with his wife, and then that moment with Margot Robbie, and you thought, oh, there was a connection there. It's like he can get so far emotionally, but he can't get much further.
No.
It's weird.
Yeah.
There you go.
What do you think?